Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode three, In the Dark. And today we have our first, I realized it's our first actual guest on the podcast. We have Chrissy with us.
Hi guys.
I don't know if you guys remember her. Let's see, when's the last time you were on? Was it Lover's Block?
I think so. Yeah, I was.
And then I think you came – you and Leia popped on to talk about a few things for the spoiler section for Graduation Day Part 1 and 2 over on Buffy. But this is your first time on Angel, and I'm really excited.
Thanks for having me.
So right off the bat, I'm just going to say this episode is 10,000 times better than the episode we covered 2 weeks ago.
No connections here.
Oh no, stop. I don't want to hear that word ever again.
No doblique. No creepy like tentacle monster.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, let's move past that.
Although there is a lot of creepiness in this episode. Let's
I think the tentacled monster is easier to swallow than we have the creepy pedophile guy and then Spike, who's like his main cheerleader. So yeah, it doesn't get much better, but this episode is far better written and it is a lot more enjoyable. I feel like it's pushing the plot forward. I kind of get a little bit of an idea of where they're going with Angel's character. We're not just talking about like obviously loneliness and connection and all that stuff, but we're moving past that to, okay, what is Angel's purpose? Where is the show going? And I feel like this would probably have been a really great episode for episode two.
Yeah.
But I do understand, you know, obviously why they couldn't do that. But so this episode was written by Douglas Petrie. And again, he's one of the writers over on Buffy, but this is back when the season was still having a lot of Buffy writers writing for it. They haven't brought in Tim Minear yet or others. It's directed by Bruce Seth Green, who has also directed over on Buffy a few times. It aired October 19th, 1999. So despite editing 5 minutes out of the episode, when this episode aired in the UK, it angered the ITC due to the violence and adult themes. The network quickly moved it to a later time slot than its usual 6 p.m., which is kind of crazy. There's like every time I read about like what happened on the BBC and stuff with certain Buffy episodes and stuff, like I would be so frustrated as a viewer back then watching in England or wherever in the UK, simply because they would cut stuff. Sometimes they would air the very, very, very significantly edited portion of the episode first. And then if you wanted to watch the full episode, you had to stay up super late. And I'm sure like not everybody's parents let them do that. Like I think it would have been so frustrating to be a fan during that time.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of UK fans are always talking. Like anytime I see comments, it's like, oh, I watched this episode late. I had to wait to watch it like years later because they never let us watch it on like the broadcast, like the BBC. Is it the BBC? Yeah.
It's BBC, yeah.
Yeah.
Or they'd have to wait like months and months later than us because things were either released differently or like when they
pulled Graduation Day. I wonder if it was the same in Canada because we have the CBC, like the Canadian Broadcasting, whatever the C stands for.
Yeah. Censoring probably.
But I wonder if that was also the case. I don't know.
Well, I do know with Graduation Day Part 2, they actually aired it in Canada right along when it was supposed to be. So a lot of people bootlegged it from Canada in the US so they could watch it when it was first aired, which was actually really hilarious that everyone's
bootlegging. I guess it depends on like the channel that it's airing on too. And I guess Canada is like we get a lot of US channels. So
yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Probably. Yeah. But very frustrating. This episode is obviously the very first real crossover with the Buffy episode, The Harsh Light of Day. If you listen to our Becoming Buffy analysis of that episode last week, some of this stuff will be a little bit of a repeat, like initially, but I think it just ties together so beautifully. So I'm going to kind of reiterate it a little bit for those of you who didn't hear it. So The Harsh Light of Day comes from the saying, the cold light of day, meaning things can be seen clearly during the day versus at night. Or the revealing of reality. You're able to think about it clearly apart from the emotions you had at the time. Usually you feel sorry or ashamed by what happened. And I think that ties in really nicely with this episode because Angel's clarity on his purpose and life and all that stuff happens when he's able to walk into the sunlight. So the titles just work really, really well together. And I absolutely love the symmetry here. So Amara, Gem of Amara, actually means eternal in Sanskrit, which is the language of ancient India. And on Buffy, it was definitely a metaphor of searching for perfect eternal love because you have Anya there, you have Buffy with Parker, you have – what's the other couple that was in there
Spike
too?
Spike and Harmony.
Oh, yeah, Spike and Harmony.
No love there.
Yeah, right, right. Which is why it's significant that Buffy sends it to Angel. It's very clear the message that she's trying to send, which is she still thinks of him at the end of the day. Like, their love and their bond is very much eternal.
I was just going to say, isn't it in The Harsh Light of Day that there's that scene at the – is it at the very end when Willow and Buffy are walking and talking about Parker? There's yes. dialogue that was cut yes. out that does mention Angel specifically, how it's yes. like – Buffy is, you know, Buffy's doing all of this because she's not thinking about Angel and she's, you know, trying to get over Angel. And she should have known that this is because she's not over Angel and that's all she can think about. And I think it was Jane Espenson that said that they had to cut that scene because the episode was like 6 minutes too long. But I feel like it would yeah. have been like great to like leave it in there. But you can read between the lines, I feel like.
It's pretty obvious that it actually is about Angel. But yes. And I think that that is partially true for Angel in this episode as well. But I think the gem means eternal in a different sense for him. It's a representation of his immortality as well as continued path towards redemption. And I think a lot of times, like I've talked about it, Buffy is kind of tied up with mortality for Angel. His desire to be human is also partially due to his desire to have a normal life with Buffy. So a lot of times his redemption and Buffy are just kind of like entangled with each other. And the same goes for Buffy as well. So when I mention one and don't mention the other, usually like, you know, read between the lines. Mm-hmm. And also like you, Leia, were on for the prom at Becoming Buffy. But when I think about this title, and I mentioned this on Becoming Buffy, but I think about Buffy and Angel's breakup scene in the prom where Angel wants Buffy to be with someone who can take her into the light. And yeah. so it's just like this representation of Angel's like, I'm in the dark. Like he's always recognized that. But by the end of this episode, he's almost embraced it in a positive way in the sense that like he realizes he can do good with it now.
Yes. I think, you know what? While I was watching this episode, I just kept wondering why the Rachel storyline? Why yeah. did they include this in here? And then at the very end, or I think it was the conversation they were having when they were in her yes. apartment about, yeah. you know, letting go of the darkness and having faith. Mm-hmm. Or sorry, letting go of, gosh, I forget the exact dialogue, but it was something about like finding your faith. And at the very end, the last scene, you know, yeah. Doyle's like, oh, got a call from Rachel and she wants to let you know that she's found her faith, or like, I guess, yeah. like found her purpose is basically yes. what they're trying to say. And then I realized finally, I was like, yeah, the whole thing, it's like a whole parallel between what Angel, it's like Angel in the ring versus, not versus, but like alongside Rachel and trying to get away from her abusive boyfriend who's like keeping her in the dark. And it's, you know. I just thought it was really cool because I the whole time I was like, why? Why are we like focusing mm-hmm. on this? But mm-hmm. it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it totally does. I actually really, really liked the conversations between Rachel and Angel because it just shows where Angel's come from and how mature he is and how he's even thinking about his relationship with Buffy in retrospect. Obviously, the abusive relationship aspect is very much a metaphor of when he was Angelus mm-hmm. From season two. But I don't know. I just appreciated that it's a reminder that once again, Angel is thinking about what's best for Buffy and letting her go, you know? So an episode about a vampire entitled In the Dark is going to have important lighting. And we'll definitely talk about it as we get to it in the episode, but the fact that Angel can't go into the sun was a huge hurdle for the show in shooting scenes, not just for this episode, but just kind of in general. Ian Wolfe, who was first assistant director, has a funny quote, and he says, "It was a really tough show because obviously vampires don't come out during the day, so we would spend a lot of time shooting the grungy alleys of downtown LA at night. Typically, your Monday would start out with a 7 a.m. call, and by the time you got around to Friday, you were in for a 5 or 6 p.m. call." Working all night long, and then the sun would be coming up Saturday morning when you'd wrap. It was a grueling process for the crew and cast. I know there was at one point an episode where there was the Ring of Amara, which Angel could wear and he could come out into the sun. At the end of the episode, it got destroyed. For a couple of months after that, there was a chant from the crew about bringing back the Ring of Amara. I mean, Honestly, that's rough. Like, you start off your weekend, you're going to sleep all of Saturday. So there goes half of your weekend. And then if you want to have any sort of life, it's Sunday. But if you have to be there like crack of dawn Monday, you can't do much. That just sucks.
Yeah. That's why they called them, what was it, Buffy the Weekend Slayer? I know this is Angel, but they probably had the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. So David Boreanaz says this about the episode. He goes, "Oh, the ring. I was able to walk out in the sun with the ring. Every crew member was pissed because I had the ring, and that meant they had to work until 4 or 5 in the morning." James Marsters. Okay, Leia. You sent me a screenshot of this quote. All right, I want to hear you read it.
Just a funny little quote from James Marsters. So he's referring to his appearance on this episode, and he says, and the people who know, after I read this, you'll understand why we're reading this. So the quote goes, "Working on Angel for that episode felt very much like working on Buffy. My biggest memory of that, however, was that I was still at that point jealous of David, so I could not stand going on his show and being so much shorter than he is. I remember I put lifts in my boots for the first time that episode. It worked, but I had to hide it. I didn't tell anybody. I remember doing the stunts with lifts, which is a little bit harder. It's like doing it in high heels. I remember thinking, oh, that's just too pathetic, James. You can't wear lifts the whole time. Just admit it. You're shorter than David."
Oh my gosh. Have you seen the interview where it's like, I think it was the 20th anniversary of Buffy or the 25th or whatever. Yeah, it was the 20th. And you have James and David sitting next to each other, and James is talking about how like his girlfriend had a crush on David during the time of filming, and he was like super insecure because of it and stuff. And I'm like, James, man, you're not making yourself look very good here.
So he wears lifts, guys, is what we're saying.
Which is funny because like we didn't really see him next to Angel very much in season 2 because James was supposed to be in a wheelchair, his character was.
Yeah.
So it's really funny watching them next to each other here in this scene or in this episode, because I definitely know it's like, hey, like the height difference, it felt weird, but I didn't really dwell on it simply because there's later scenes and stuff and later episodes, but oh, James. Oh, James.
And he's not even that much taller than him either. Like, what is he? Like, David Boreanaz is what, like 6'1"?
Well, no. So I know that David Boreanaz is like 6'2", 6'3", and James Marsters is 5'7", 5'8". So there's quite a significance.
I think David Boreanaz is like 6'1", actually.
I'll Google it. I don't
for
mind.
Science.
For scientific purposes. Let's see. Okay. So David Boreanaz, he is 6'1", and Mr. James Marsters is 5'9".
All right. So the episode opens with yet another blonde girl running in an alley. Passion the Nerd was really funny. He was like, "Angel, got something on your mind there?" And I was like, "Yeah, you could say." So this was really interesting. The first thing I thought of when I saw this moment was the music did not sound like the past two episodes of Angel. It actually sounds very much like Buffy. It opens with the oboe, and the oboe is something that is very common on Buffy. And I was kind of like, oh, huh. And then later on in the episode, I was like, I know why they're doing this. Because obviously they're talking a lot about Buffy and Angel's relationship. But they also do bring back a couple of iconic music. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I noticed. Yes. I was like, I literally wrote in my notes. I was like, does this sound like I wrote Sarah will know.
Yeah.
Then, right? The scene where he's doing Tai Chi.
It is. It's the exact same score. Yeah.
But it's slower or like a lower key or something.
It's a different instrument. And then it's kind of just a variation of it. But it's definitely very much the same. And then they play that same score again later on when he's out stepping out into the sunlight.
Oh my God.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
I knew it. Yeah. Sarah. See, I have an ear. I have an ear now.
You do. I'm so proud of you. Okay, everyone else is like, what are you talking about? When we get there, don't worry. I'll tell you all about it. So I think that they were trying to intentionally throw back to Buffy simply because Spike's here, Oz is here, but also like Buffy is just kind of in every crevice of this episode, even though she's only mentioned at the very beginning, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, okay, guys, were they intentionally trying to style Eddie, Rachel's ex-boyfriend, to look like Angel?
I thought he looked like Angel.
Did you guys notice that?
I did. When I first glanced at the screen, because this is like my first, you know, watch through Angel. Well, my second one now. I'm on my second watch through, but whatever. I thought he was Angel at first. Like when I glanced, I was like, he does look like Angel. He does.
The hair is a little too on point. Like maybe if it was just the jacket, I would have been like, okay, that's kind of a weird coincidence. But the hair, they even stuck it up on the sides like they do with like David Boreanaz. I was like, okay, that's intentional. And that was like that and the music was my first clue that, okay, they're trying to do parallels here between Rachel and Eddie and Angel and Buffy. Aww. All right. So Lenny, it pulls out a gun. I was like, wow, this really reminds me of I Only Have Eyes for You and then Beauty and the Beasts. Like we're kind of like, this is like a quick little run through of Buffy and Angel's, or I guess I should say Angelus's torment of Buffy. Rachel says, I didn't do anything, I swear. Lenny says, no, I know what you do. I see it, the men, the lies, this is the last time. And Angel steps in, takes down Lenny. Poor Lenny, the burden of terrorizing your girlfriend too much for you. Or I guess I called him Eddie. His name is Lenny. I have Eddie in my brain. Stranger Things fans know. So then we're having this conversation between Angel and Rachel, and Rachel's like, I can't believe you actually showed up. And then the camera pulls back, and we hear this voiceover from Spike. Now, for those of you who have not watched Buffy recently, which I'm pretty sure is like maybe five of you, a little quick recap of what happened in the Harsh Light of Day. There's this gem of Amar. It's a ring. And Spike shows up and has been there for, I think, a few weeks at least, tunneling, trying to find it. He's in a relationship with Harmony. And he's very toxic and abusive to her. He gets the ring. Him and Buffy have a fight where he is absolutely horrendous to her. He taunts her, calls her a slut, makes fun of her for being broken by Parker or, like, brokenhearted about Parker, brings up the relationship with Angel and all that stuff, ends up getting his butt completely kicked by Buffy and then leaves Sunnydale chasing Oz in the ring. So
absolutely vile.
He's not my favorite person right now.
No.
I will say, though, for however much I hate Spike, this is actually pretty funny.
This is a great monologue. Here. It's so funny.
He's like, how can I thank you, you mysterious black-clad hunk of a night thing? No need, little lady. Your tears of gratitude are enough for me. Oh, and then like Rachel stepping closer and he's like, no, not the hair. Never the hair.
Never the hair.
Oh, so funny. I feel like this crossover is perfect, having Spike on here with Angel, mm-hmm. because they hate each other so much. They've got so much unfinished business. Obviously, couldn't have Drew quite on here, but I feel like Drew and Angel kind of have like a love to hate each other.
They have an understanding also. Yeah. Whereas I feel like with Spike, it's more of like a – I feel like Spike is like the fly that won't stop buzzing around Angel's head, and he's just like, go away. Yes. Like –
yeah,
you know,
totally. But I will say that Spike is vile. And I know I said it before. I'm going to say it again. Spike is vile in this episode. He's vile in the episode before. And he's about as bad as he was in School Hard. And I think we tend to forget how evil and just horrendous he is, because we kind of feel a little bad for him in season two because Angelus shows up and Angelus is just like, you know, completely malevolent. And then we have Lover's Walk where Spike is just pathetic. Yeah. So I think it's important to notice and remember that Spike is actually kind of a threat, even if it's only because of his unpredictability, you know?
Yes.
Also, the big fluffy puppy bit I know he's trying to make fun of Angel, but it's really kind of endearing because if you remember in the last episode, Buffy told Parker that the bite on her neck came from an angry puppy.
Doesn't everyone compare him to a puppy, though? Doesn't Drew and Buffy compare Angel to a puppy?
A Willow does in Willow. The Wish.
Yes.
And I think there's a couple Willow. Other instances. Yeah. He's been referred to as a puppy several times now.
Puppies are really adorable.
Or like a Care Bear with fangs. Care Bear.
So then Spike's like, "Mwah, ha, 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 your gruesome, horrible death." God. And we just can't take him
so
seriously.
So dramatic. I'm just like, really? Like, really, though?
Right. Well, all I'm remembering is him sobbing on the bench when he's talking about where him and Drusilla, like, bit that homeless man. And both Angel and Buffy are staring at him like, "You're so pathetic. Do you know that?"
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Spike is just... He is the drama. Spike is the entire drama for no reason.
So then we cut to Oz driving his van through the night. And I feel like we got really spoiled this episode because we have not one cameo, but two. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel like Oz fits very well into the Angel world.
I wrote that like Angel and Oz are the friendship, like the bromance that we, the best bromance that we never got. Because they're Agreed. So similar in so many ways, just personality-wise. And I feel like, yes, Oz would have fit right in. Because I feel like even in the scene in, like, Angel's basement, like, it's almost like Oz understands why Angel yes. doesn't want to put the ring on right away. Yep. Like, he gets it.
They made allusions to – or like parallels to Oz and Angel's journeys in Beauty and the Beast really briefly when they're talking about like the Beast and stuff. But then they just kind of stopped. And I so wish they had gone a little further with that. I know season 3 was pretty packed. But as we've talked about before, like Oz isn't very delved into as a character. And I think that if like he had been on Angel, obviously we love him and Willow together. But if he had been on Angel, I think they could have been able to flesh out his inner turmoil with the whole wolf thing. And mm-hmm. I think that just would have been so good. So Cordelia is talking about how they had their first walk-in client. She's printing out their invoice. Fun fact. So I wrote, I was like, oh, like Cordelia, like actually like is typing fairly well now. So when she prints out the invoice,
I wrote that too.
Did you write that too?
I was like, Cordelia learned how to type today.
Yeah, today. I wrote, or she's like gotten real good at hunting and pecking.
Yeah.
So this is super funny, but when she prints out the invoice, you can see very clearly that the O in invoice is not proportional to the rest of the word. It's actually spelled like it's a zero. So like it's almost as if Cordelia accidentally pressed the zero instead of the O key.
She's trying.
She's working on it, okay, Sarah? Give She's
her
trying.
An A for effort.
She also thinks that Rachel's going to pay them. So that's another... That's another, like, it's okay, Cordelia. Like, you're learning.
She's delusional, it's but it's all right.
I'm like, no one's paying you, Cordelia, but that's okay. You make your little invoice.
I love that Cordelia is never optimistic about anything in life unless it's getting more money and the fact that she's a good actress that can get more money. Like, those are the only things that she's ever optimistic about.
I mean, same. So, like,
Cordelia energy 24/7.
Do you also print out your invoices with a little zero on top just to be, you know, a little different?
Yes, of course.
All right. So, Doyle's like trying to be encouraging, but he's like, Cordelia, just because there's an invoice doesn't mean we're going to get paid. And so she's like, well, you know, are you saying just like, why bother? And then, you know, insults him saying that she'd only go on a cruise with him if he looked like Matthew McConaughey. And then Oz walks in. Hello, LA. He's just so smooth in everything he does.
He's a cupcake.
And then Cordelia getting so excited about seeing him. I was like, what in the world? But then I remember they both have been trauma bond because, you know, they were mutually cheated on.
No, it kind of felt like, you know, when you like see someone from high school and you're like, hi, how are you? You know, like that first initial conversation. And then like, there's nothing else to talk about. That's how I felt like how their conversation ended.
I also wrote Oz is the worst person to catch up with. Because I feel like he's just, it's like, yeah, all good.
And you're like, okay, moving on.
Okay, cool, bye.
Someone pointed out that they thought it was really funny, like if Oz had come onto the show of Angel, you would have had the original Scoobies' three X's on there. Isn't that funny?
So true. Oh, I did want to mention something. So just about Doyle, I feel like they put a lot of emphasis in this episode on like his bad habits. Like the fact that he owes people money, because later on when he's like calling. So I feel like it's like setting up this like image of like, because we don't know what Doyle has to atone for, I feel like. And I feel like in this episode, it was kind of showing us that like Doyle's not like a stand-up citizen. And, you know, he owes people money. He likes to drink and gamble, and he likes the strip club, and he likes, you know, all of these, like, he has all these vices or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I kind of noticed that. I don't know if that, like, matters, but I feel like that kind of gives us a little bit more about Doyle.
That's really interesting. I honestly had not even caught that, but now that I'm thinking about it, like even him talking about going to the pub and then Cordelia has that like offhanded comment mm-hmm. or like just throwaway comment where she's like, yeah, Doyle like always wants to go to the pub or something like that. And then they have the phone conversation later. Like they definitely are building towards something with him for sure.
Yeah.
So then the gang takes him downstairs to Angel's apartment. Angel's reading yet another book because he has a library. He's on top of a library. They're never going to mention it again, but I'm going to keep bringing that up. I'm thrilled about that as someone who used to be a librarian.
You look like a librarian.
Are we
you
all were? Shocked? No.
Giles?
Is that you? Sarah?
I had to do work study in college. And I worked at the library for 2 years and I hated it. It was like run like prison pretty much. I'm pretty sure.
You're like a jack of all trades though, because you're like a musician and a librarian and a mother, and
I'm just multi-talented. Yes. Man, what can I say? No, not at all. It was not hard. It just was like, yeah, it was very interesting. Anyway, okay. Angel has brought up a book from the library in my headcanon, and I love how they like have this conversation. He's like, Oz. Oz is like, hey. He's like, nice surprise. Oz is like, thanks. And I'm just like, eat it up every time.
This
I love
perfect.
It.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. This perfect, is how perfect, every perfect. Interaction should be, like in fiction and real life. Just short and sweet. Get to the point. Let's move on.
Yes. But every time I see this, I think about the fact that David Boreanaz and Seth Green were absolute lunatics to each other behind the scenes. You guys know the story where David Boreanaz would poop in Seth Wait, Green's
trailer.
Wait,
I did trailer. Not know that.
And leave it in there.
So Seth Green told this story probably on another podcast or something where when he was on set for season two or season three, he would come to his trailer because he had night shoots, and he would come at like 2 or 3 in the morning or something like that. And he would be like – or it was like really early in the morning, maybe after the night shoots. But he'd be like, why is there a turd in my toilet? Like, what is this? Like, and it was happening every single day. And he's like, I don't understand what's going on. So one day he like got to work early, whether intentionally or unintentionally, and caught David Boreanaz coming out of his trailer. And David was like, ah, you caught me. And Seth realized that he just intentionally was waiting to just drop it
Who
in his trailer at the same time.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so funny. I feel like both of them are like such goofballs in real life. The fact that they play such like stoic, like serious, brooding guys in the show is like crazy. Like, how do you not let that strong personality like come through? Which is just to say that they're like good actors. Like, whoever says like David Boreanaz is not a good actor, like,
no, false.
David Boreanaz, I think, does a great job, because it's such a difference from, like, just even watching interviews with him. He's completely, like, insane.
Yeah, I agree. And Seth Green is kind of quirky as well, which is really funny. Okay, but the interaction between Oz and Angel in this scene, I think you mentioned this, Leia. You could just tell Oz knows. He clues in exactly on what Angel's feeling. Oz also knows how Buffy's feeling in the other episodes too. And so I think there's a part of him that's just kind of like, he recognizes what's happening with both of them. And he just has like this knowing look. And I think I think he would have been a really great friend for Angel if he was on here longer. And I really, really wish that we would have had that. I also think that he would have been a really interesting dynamic with the gang. But I need to stop talking about that, because
I should've, would've, coulda. Definitely.
And I think this entire scene makes me think that he actually knows more so than Cordelia and Doyle how Angel's doing. Like, I get this sense that Cordelia is just kind of like over Angel, brooding over Buffy. Like, she's like, move on. Doyle didn't actually know Buffy, so he doesn't really seem to know. Like, he's still kind of new to the gang. But Oz, I feel like I kind of wish we had a heart to heart with the two of them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I do want to say, with the whole Cordelia thing, I feel like it's great that Cordelia is there to, like, you know, she's tactless. She says what's on her mind and, you know, everyone takes it as, like, the truth. But I just feel like sometimes, like, in this instance, for example, it's like, just shut up, Cordelia. And she, like, gets there on her own eventually. But it's like, sometimes I feel like she can be, like, very insensitive.
Totally.
And that's a part of the character, of course.
Right.
And we'll see, like, how she evolves as the show goes on. But I just feel like sometimes it's like, I feel like a lot of people get very annoyed with the brooding that Angel does. And they use Cordelia as kind of like a mouthpiece for, like, oh my God, he's so annoying for brooding. But it's like, there's something behind that, that, like, even Cordelia should be acknowledging. But she's not there yet. And yeah, but Oz is, like, Oz understands.
Right. I agree. I also, and I know we talked about it briefly, like, I felt like Charisma Carpenter didn't really know what to do with her body when she wasn't talking in this episode. Like, there were moments, especially like in this scene, where someone else would be talking and it was almost like you could see her thinking about acting or like the next line. And there was a few moments where she, I felt like she did some like unnatural body movements, like when she exits the scene and stuff. Like, I feel like Cordelia would have just taken off and left without, like, waving to Angel. So it just, like, there was a few moments and, like, acting choices in this episode that just kind of pulled me out of it. And I do know that Charisma was struggling with anxiety, so it just felt like she was in her head a lot, you know?
I definitely agree. Yeah, I did notice that too. Along with a lot of, like, I think we also talked about this, but, like, just the dialogue was just – some of it was just, like, off. Like, there were some really good punchlines and stuff, but some of the stuff that was said was, like, would these characters really say these things? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's pretty much inferred that Buffy's struggling just as much as Angel is. And then the symbolic act of the ring being sent to him shows that she's not moving on just like he isn't. So Patch the Nerd, he felt like Angel was hurt that Buffy didn't actually bring the ring to him herself. And I personally don't know that I got that out of this scene. I felt like it was more of just – what did you think?
That's exactly how I read the scene. Oh, yeah, just the way he asked it. You know, he's like – she wanted you to have it, so she sent you. I just feel like that line where he's like, so she sent you. It almost, and just the look on his face, it just looked like this is from Buffy. And it's almost like he was hoping that she would be the one to give it to him. And he was kind of disappointed that she sent Oz instead. That's the vibe I got from, I guess, just from what I saw on screen, I guess. I'm interested to hear, like, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could totally see that happening. I thought this scene was really intriguing, and I kind of want to go back and rewatch it again because I feel like there was so many emotions playing on David Boreanaz's face. Like, you could just see kind of like the hope, but also the fear, the idea that, like, Spike's after it. But this is kind of like Buffy handing something to him, like, as kind of like a, hey, like, maybe we can get together kind of thing, or we could at least have a somewhat normal life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I felt, but then he's like afraid to take it because, you know, in his mind, he's like, this is a shortcut. But then knowing later on that what he wants is forgiveness, like, I just felt like there were a lot of things. And so I felt, to me, it was more like he was too distracted by all those things to even really process the fact that Buffy hadn't sent or hadn't, like, delivered it herself. That it was more just the act that she would send him something like that and, like, all the gravitas that
I feel
comes
like
with
it's
that.
Both.
It could be.
Yeah, like, I definitely agree with what you're saying in terms of, like, what the ring – like, this ring is very meaningful. As soon as Oz pulls it out and he puts it in front of Angel's face, you can see his brain start to work and be like, oh, my God. Like, his face immediately turns into that, like, pained face because he knows what this means. And I think, like, I guess the way I read the scene is, like, the fact that it's coming from Buffy, like, has big meaning. And the fact that she didn't bring it herself also has big meaning.
That's a good way of putting it.
It's, like, disappointing to him that it wasn't her that brought it. And I think that's why he just puts it away because it's, like, he almost has to – I have to think about this – because this is a big deal.
Yeah. Well, and I think, what is it that Buffy and Angel always say to each other? Forever, right? And Amara means eternity. So it's just, it's like another picture of like Buffy being like, hey, maybe this could work. But not like not sure if she should fully commit to it by actually being there herself. You know, like it's almost like she was giving him the ring and being like, you make the choice. And Angel's like over there like, ugh, like this is a really big choice to make on my own. Because he's like, what would have happened if he'd like accepted the ring and gone back to Sunnydale? Would Buffy have been like, let's get together? Like, I don't know. Because at this point, he's the one that broke up with her. And even though she agreed, I feel like she would have taken him back in a heartbeat, for sure. At least like at for this sure. point. So we learn that the ring is priceless because it renders the wearer 100% unkillable if he's a vampire. Finds out that Spike is looking for it. So then they kind of like get the cue. Doyle's like, all right, well, I'm going to go to the pub. Takes off. And Oz, you can tell, wants to stay. He wants to talk to Angel. And Angel's just like, go ahead. Like, I need a moment to process. And without like, you know, protesting, Oz just goes. And I'm like, no, stay. Like, this would be really good. But I know they're trying to save that moment for when he's being tortured later on. Like, we have that reveal of what Angel wants.
Right.
So that whole conversation between Doyle and Cordelia is very much laying the foundation for something later on. I feel like a lot of their interactions this episode were just to kind of be like, hey, we're going somewhere with this, but not yet. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then this moment, the Tai Chi. This is so interesting because the music, the pose, the tank top, the Tai Chi, it's all reminiscent of season 3 of Buffy, specifically of Revelations when Buffy and Angel do Tai Chi together. And the music is the exact same. And it's so cool. Like I listened to them both back to back. Oh, so good.
I had to rewind. I was like, wait, is this the song?
Yeah, it totally is.
Yeah.
And then they also intentionally have like the phone ringing right there too. Almost like Angel's kind of waiting for a phone call from Buffy. And they mention that several times in this episode. Like Rachel even talks about how like she's the one that calls him and whenever she's jonesing for him and stuff too. And then they've already set the precedent of Angel calling Buffy in the season premiere and then hanging up. So it's like – they're definitely laying the groundwork here to show that Angel is also suffering his own addiction of a sort. And then they have kind of the parallels of Doyle having his addiction. Like, it's just very interesting, like, kind of what they're doing. And I kept thinking, this is what the last episode was missing. There are so many layers to the writing, little inferences, little looks, little things that are happening that help you understand and kind of see things from a different perspective versus the last episode was just connection.
Yeah, this is definitely, like, a big character episode.
Yeah, I love it. So it's Rachel calling, not Angel, which again is significant. She says they let Lenny out. The lawyer said something about a technicality. Angel goes over, and as he's in the underground garage, Spike, who, you know, just always has to have the biggest weapon in the room, just smashes a beam right into him. And I feel like this is very Spike. He has no finesse. He just jumps into everything head first without thinking.
He's very, like, petulant. Like, he's very, like, just obnoxious and, like, cocky. And it's like, classic Spike, you know? Just big personality, like, all talk, like, no bite. Because he's kind of pathetic, too.
But even, like, from his first episode, like, School Hard, his killing of the Anointed One, and then his ambushing the school, like, I think it's the night of St. Vigius, he decides to go a couple days earlier.
Yeah. He's very impulsive.
Yes, impulsive. Right. Angel kind of gets the best of him just as Cordelia and Doyle run in there. And Spike's all like, Cordelia, you look smashing. Did you lose weight? And Cordelia's like all flattered. She's like, yeah, there's this great gym.
The way James Marsters delivers that line is hilarious. He goes, Cordelia.
Yeah, he's like hitting on her. And he's like off flat on his back, like probably still winded. He's like, you look smashing.
It didn't even seem like he was hitting on her. It seemed like he was talking to, like, Joyce Summers. Like, oh, like, no, you look great. Like, ooh.
I mean, same diff, right? Like, I feel like sometimes, like, Spike turns on the charm for Joyce.
Honestly.
So funny. Yeah, it felt like Angel when he was pretending to be Angelus in Enemies when he's like, did you do something different with your hair, Joyce?
Yeah.
And she was all
exactly
like,
exactly. I was like, oh.
Well, the funny thing to me is I couldn't tell if she was all offended because he said that she was fat or because she realized that she was, like, getting all excited about the villain.
Yeah. I also feel like that, like, just that whole interaction just from Cordelia's side was just so awkward.
It was
like,
very
it was
weird.
Just like, oh, like, there's this really great gym. And then she just, like, I don't know. It was just very, like, weird.
There was no natural transition. You can really see her thinking, going, laugh, laugh, and then have it hit you, realize, and then done.
Yes, exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly. That's exactly how I felt. I was like, this is very out of place. Like, I don't understand.
Which is funny because it is a Cordelia line. Like, I could see Cordelia doing that, but the way that Charisma delivered it, it just felt more forced than
a little bit awkward. Yeah. Normal.
So then Spike's like, "Oh, get that ring. This isn't over until one of us is a pile of dust." Then he runs off. Just idle threats. Idle threats coming out of
it's
this man's
just
mouth.
So funny.
But he says it in his Cockney accent Cordelia calls him.
"Oh, get that ring. This isn't over until one of us is a pile of dust, mate."
Like, what and then do he just you runs mean, off. Spike? Like, no.
This part's interesting. Angel has his vamp face, and which, again, they're strategic about when they do it. It's very much to be like, hey, they're not the same, but they're kind of the same. Spike is Angel's past, and Angel is trying to get away from his past, but he kind of can't. And so he tells Doyle, which I was like, very convenient. Angel, being an excellent wingman, is telling Doyle to take Cordelia back to his place.
Oh.
I was like, very nice, writers. Very nice. See what you're doing there. And then we have this really, really cool moment where they leave and we watch them kind of go into the light and Angel's in the shadow and he like wipes the blood at the corner of his mouth and just kind of like stares. Mm-hmm. And like there's this moment and it's like it speaks volumes about where his head is at. And kind of like even the purpose of this episode, like he's wrestling with whether or not to accept this gift that Buffy's given him and realizing that if he had the ring, he wouldn't have to worry about pesky little things like blood and getting hurt.
Oh, okay.
And,
sorry.
Yeah. And Spike.
Like Spike.
Just stake Spike, take the ring and you'll never have to worry about either one ever again.
Exactly.
But I just love little moments like that. I'm a sucker for when they show us and don't just hit us over the head with it and tell us, you know?
Absolutely.
All right. So in Doyle's apartment, he's talking on the phone. But I noticed last episode and this one that they are styling Cordelia in a very specific color. And it's this burnt orange. And this episode, it was very obvious because literally every scene she'd have a costume change, but it was the same color, at least top.
Interesting.
And so I also noticed they also softened her makeup and made it warmer and not as dark as it was on Buffy and then even the pilot episode. And so I looked up, because I love color theory. I think it's really, really interesting. Color typically means something in the media, especially in the Buffyverse. And I looked up what burnt orange represents, and it's actually pretty cool. So some say that burnt orange symbolizes negative emotions such as selfishness, pride, and aggression, while others also say on the flip side that burnt orange comes with a very autumnal, fall-ish vibes.
Fall-ish
vibes. Yeah. Evoking feelings of warmth and comfort. And it works really well as an accent alongside dark blues, grays, and blacks. And I feel like those two sides fit Cordelia so well. Like she does bring a warmth to her, but she's also got this very arrogant and selfish side of her. Like it's very Cordelia.
That's so true.
And I think too, like even just showing the accents, like Angel is always wearing black and like these darker blues and it's always like everything is very just like cold and then there's Cordelia who brings that warmth and that life to everything. And as I was thinking about it, like as we continue into the season, I'm pretty sure they keep styling Charisma Carpenter, at least in this season, in a lot of burnt orange. Like I think of I Will Remember You. That's what she's wearing, that top and stuff. So I think that was just very intentional and I kind of like that.
I do like that a lot. She does bring like such a lightness. Yeah, definitely agree.
She brings the humanity to the show that is very desperately needed, I think.
Yes, absolutely. And she looks so pretty in season 1.
She does. She
is
gorgeous.
Her hair is like beautiful. Like she looks so great.
Agreed, agreed. I also just love the style of that era, the very California girl beachy type. That's just like totally
That's like my
vibe
hair
right
goals.
There.
Like I want my hair to look like hers so bad.
Yeah, she's got gorgeous hair. Even now, like I look mm-hmm. at her Instagram, I'm like, dang girl, like you can, and she can pull off like pretty much any hair color except for, I will say, short and blonde, but long and blonde works really well.
Yeah, you know, her hair looks great even still now.
Yeah. They talk about Spike. Cordelia's like, yeah, you should be worried. He's like really scary. And they talk about how messy Doyle's apartment is. And then we cut to Rachel's apartment. Again, with the lighting. Angel's like coming into her apartment. He kind of has to skirt past that patch of sunlight that's in the middle of her room. And I just, again, it's for an episode titled In the Dark. They're trying to make a very big contrast between Angel and the rest of humanity. And then Rachel's like, you keep showing up like this and I'm going to think you're a man of your word. I just feel bad for this poor girl.
She's been traumatized.
She has. And like the actress does a really good job. It just feels very real. And like this is kind of like a little bit of a rabbit trail, but I will say our justice system when it comes to like domestic violence and the fact that they often don't take it very seriously and you have so many cases of men being locked up for like a night or two and then being let out on bail. And then like a lot of times I was listening to this like crime podcast and they were saying a lot of times like with domestic violence and stuff, it's usually like a fifth or sixth or seventh or whatever altercation that's when something actually ends up happening, done. Whether she's like, you know, killed or whatever. And there usually were very, very blatant warning signs that happen, but no one does anything because our justice system until is set it's up.
Too late. Yeah.
Yeah. It's punishment for something awful instead of preventative.
Right.
And I just think that's a huge shame.
It is. It's despicable.
So then we have this really interesting conversation between Rachel and Angel. And Leah, I know you said it was this. Was it this scene that you were like, oh, I get why Rachel's in this moment? Scene.
Yeah.
What was it specifically? Like, what bit of dialogue?
So it's a line that Angel says specifically, and this is the line. So he goes, so you're at a crossroads. I know. It's easy. It's either go for the easy fix and wait for the consequences or take the hard road and go with faith. And it was when he said this line where I was like, oh my God, this is making so much sense now because Angel is also at a crossroads with the ring and whether he should take the easy way out and use it and live in the light or if, you know, he needs to take the hard road and go with what he believes, you know, he should earn his forgiveness, which is that would be like the hard road instead of taking the easy way out and using the ring. So it was this particular bit of dialogue that I was just like, oh, okay, it makes sense now. So I thought that was really cool because I was just, like I said in the beginning, I was like, why?
We're detracting from Spike and the pedophile here. Like,
I was like, Rachel, why? But I've seen this episode so many times and I've never like made the connection until now. But I guess it's because I was asking the question why. But yeah, I thought this particular line was like really cool.
Yeah, I agree. There are some really great lines between Angel and a couple of characters here. Honestly, Angel had the best lines of the episode. But again, like it's kind of about him, so I'm not mad at it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love how Rachel says, I'm scared, Angel. I'm more scared of me right now than I am of him, which is exactly how Angel feels. He's afraid of himself, and he's afraid he's going to do something to Buffy as Angelus, but it also ties into why he will not take the Gem of Amara, because he's afraid that something will happen. Someone mentioned they're like, Angel could achieve, you know, possibly true happiness with the Gem of Amara on and turn into Angelus and that's it. Like the world's going up in smoke. No one's ever going to get that off of him.
And that's what I think, you know, we know what happens in the end. I mean, when we get there, we can talk about it more. But I think that's also a big reason why he destroys the ring. Totally. And a lot of people might be like, you know, oh, he should have just hidden it away. He should have done this or that. And it's like, but there's always that risk. Like, imagine that ring making it into Angelus's hands. Angelus is a part of Angel. So it's like, that's catastrophic. Like, that can never happen. And as long as Angel knows where the ring is or who has it or where it's hidden, Angelus knows. And that can, like, never happen. So I get why he destroys it and why he doesn't keep it. Even if like he gives it to Doyle, Angelus would go after Doyle. If he gives it to Buffy, Angelus would go after Buffy. So it's like, there's really no other way.
Yeah. In Doyle's apartment, they're talking about Spike. And again, I don't think it's a coincidence that Cordelia is mentioning about that time that Drew raised the demon that burned down or burned people from the inside out. They're talking about surprise and innocence. Again, once again, talking about reasons why Angel and Buffy cannot be together. Doyle's kind of on edge because of the phone calls he got from the people kind of calling in past debts. Angel's like got another one of his toys there. Like he's got this cool, fancy little like, what do you even call that?
The stake thing?
Is that what it is? It's the stake thing?
I think that's what it is. It's like the wrist device. He's got a lot of cool gadgets.
It was very cool. I love all like the Batman references in every single episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Doyle's like, yeah, Manny the Pig said he didn't know anything about a vampire called Spike, but I didn't mention the vampire's name. So Angel's like, aha, we will check out Manny the Pig in the Orbit Room. So we have like this cool, like very detective noir, like let's go shake up all of the suspects. Finally discovers Spike in the alleyway drinking off some girl. And he takes off, comes to a chain link fence and is like, oh, man, you caught me, blah, blah, blah. Then this creepy guy comes up and hog ties Angel, grabs him around the neck with the chain, which it's like, OK, Angel, you don't have breath. You're OK. Like, you will be all right. Like, just power through. And Spike, we talked about this before. He's just an absolute pig. He's so gross how he just like – it's like he gets off on this kind of thing. And it's disgusting.
Yeah. I think he does.
I feel like there's like –
he enjoys it.
There's like an there's an air of like disgusting misogynistic sexuality in Spike's like every movement. Like when – like – I think you mentioned when he like raises his arms up and he's just
it's like he's getting a blowjob and he's like, I deserve this. You know what I mean? Oh. Like that's what I think of. It's disgusting, but that's what it is.
Yeah, it's very, very gross.
Yeah, it is.
He's depraved.
Chrissy's just coming in with all these like Spike barbs.
He is depraved. He is sick. He is a sexual deviant. He is disgusting.
Now we know why Chrissy wanted to be on this episode. She's like, Spike?
I did. I hate Spike.
Oh, my God.
All the Joyce lovers and Spike lovers are just going to want to burn my house down.
let's not put Joyce in with Spike, Chrissy. Come on.
No, I will do her justice. She is not as bad as Spike. Please. I will say that.
Come on. Don't do my girl Joyce smash dirty like that.
No. No. Smash or pass. I'm smashing Joyce.
Okay, perfect. I like her. Spike can
kiss,
pass.
Mary, kill. Joyce, Spike, and who is the third person?
The pedophile?
The pedophile. Oh, no. Okay, now I have this mental image of Joyce here. She should not even be here. Like, what is going on? I know.
Like, what?
Thanks, Chrissy.
You're welcome.
All right, so Doyle is pacing. Cordelia is sitting by the phone. They're like, where is he? He should have called by now. So then now we're watching Angel hanging in a couple of chains by his wrists in the warehouse. And, you know, while we have the voiceover from Doyle's like, oh, yeah, he's just chilling, wind in his hair, bikini babes a whistling. I'm like, Doyle, that's your fantasy. That's not Angel's fantasy here, dude. And then this, like, creepy white-clad dude who they purposely put him in white. They made him kind of look like he's even like a parishioner.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's and like the glasses. It's weird.
It is very, very creepy.
He puts on the classical music. It's Mozart's 41st symphony. It's called Jupiter. And I wrote down, I was like, why are the villains always listening to classical music? Like, I don't get it.
The other thing too about that guy, like, did you guys notice his features are really tiny? Like, he has really tiny eyes and a really tiny nose and a really tiny mouth. Like, he does. He's just weird looking.
He does, yeah.
Like, everything about him is weird.
So he pulls out his torture tools and Spike's all like, Marcus is an expert. Marcus is an artist. Marcus, the king of torture. And I'm like, okay, Spike, calm down. Marcus can talk for himself.
Spike's got a crush on Marcus.
Another one of Spike's minions that he hires that he thinks he's like the boss of, but really.
Later on, he calls him the help. And I was like, Spike, the help just like outwitted you and totally was playing the long game and took the ring.
I feel like Spike should just stop hiring minions and like just like don't
get
don't,
his own hands don't. Dirty.
Yeah, like just do it yourself, Spike.
Spike can't actually defeat Angel, so he has to hire other people to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
Exactly.
And I do want to point out, too, this Marcus dude is absolutely vile. He's a pedophile. He likes children and stuff. But Spike is over here gleefully, like, excited about that. And so I know it's easy to, like, be like, Marcus is so, like, absolutely evil and stuff. But Spike is just as bad as him. He's just played off as more pathetic.
And more, like, funny. Like, it's played off as more, like, oh, it's just Spike. Ha ha. But it's all – it's very sinister.
Yeah.
Like all of it.
Passion the Nerd thinks that Marcus has similar abilities to Drusilla just because he hasn't been tortured to the point of insanity. The fact that he like is able to read Angel really well. He can tell when he's lying and stuff, which I wouldn't be surprised. But I was kind of like, what's going on here, Marcus? Like, are you like a human lie detector? Like, what is like, why are you able to read Angel so clearly? But yeah, it works.
He does it through like touch. Like he like touches his chest and he's like, this one's felt love. And I was like, what?
Why are you tell that just from his naked chest?
Smooth, sexy chest?
Leia's like, can I tell? Oh, yes, I can definitely tell he's no love.
I will test it.
I know it was on Becoming Buffy. Leia was talking about how there's someone that has to oil down David Boreanaz's chest.
I'll do it for free.
Yeah.
For free.
Girl. I just want to know, there's someone out there, and it's probably a woman, someone out there who has had, that was her job. She had to oil it down. And I just want, if you're out there and you're for some reason you're listening to our podcast, please just like, I want to know. I want you to come on here and tell us about your experience. Very curious.
I would have just been like, let me oil you. Like, that job. I want that job. I love him.
All right, back to torture.
I just kept thinking the whole time Marcus is like trying to be all like, oh, I'm the king of torturing. I'm just like, do you have any idea who you're torturing?
Right.
Like, do you know who Angel is or was in a past life? Or just,
yeah, I wonder if he knew.
Well, he says he knows that he has a soul because he says, Marcus says, and he has a soul. So I think that he inferred that by touching him. I don't think he actually knows who he is. Which, I mean, he might be a newer vampire, which means he's not as familiar with all the lore because it's been a while since Angelus has actually like been around to do his thing.
Right. So. But I mean, you're literally torturing the king of like physical and psychological torture.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to break him that easily. Come on, Marcus.
I love that his name is Marcus.
At least it's not Kevin, like the guy from the last episode.
So the thing that I think is the most, like the funniest part of this episode is the fact that Spike is more bored and seems to be more tortured than Angel. Like Angel's clearly in pain, but he's like handling it. Spike's over there, like the music is getting to him. And the fact that they've been there for too long, which like, is so funny.
Throwing a tantrum, like... That's the thing with Spike, like going back to whatever, he's just very impatient, immature, throwing a tantrum, acting like a petulant child. And it's like, this is why your plan, every single plan you hatch fails, Spike. Like, this is exactly why you are a terrible villain.
This is why you have to hire other people to do the stuff for you.
Yeah, like it's just you like can't take him seriously. But like you said, like we've got to also remember that there's this very sinister undertone to everything Spike does.
Yes. He's
deeply like sinister.
He's troubled.
He's very like evil still. But we're supposed to like see it as like, oh, he's pathetic. He can't hatch a plan. But like, I mean, the two aren't like mutually exclusive. He can be like very evil and stupid as all stupid is. Like,
yeah.
Leia's like so mad she can't even talk anymore.
I just like, ugh, like.
You can still have a dark mind and be stupid.
They've been pretty obvious since the beginning that Spike is not a planner. Spike's the thing that you really have to fear about Spike is one, he is impulsive, but two, he is pretty tenacious. He will keep going and going and going, and that might be part
those
of
those are his strengths. You know? Yeah, I feel like that's definitely Spike's strength is like tenacity and like being impulsive, and those two things are like. Just recipe for disaster.
So I didn't know this, but according to IMDb, David Boreanaz was actually in a fair amount of pain during the torture sequences because he had been in a car accident just before the episode was filmed.
Oh, wow.
And the accident did not severely injure him, but he did sue the driver who caused the accident for the problems his injuries caused during work. So he probably like was stiff and like had issues with his back, and then he had to be held with his hands up, and which worked for the torture scene, yeah. But yeah, isn't that crazy?
Poor baby.
All right. And so Marcus keeps asking, what do you want, Angel? What do you want? Which is really, really interesting. I liked that Marcus was like, keeps asking that. And at first I was kind of like, okay, where are you going? Where are you going? And Angel just doesn't take him seriously. A house in the country, a pair of good running shoes that you can also wear out to dinner. And Spike's like, I don't get it. Why do you keep asking this? So then Spike finally is just like, okay, I'm taking off. I cannot take this anymore. And I do want to point out that Spike is an unreliable narrator because he talks about at this point where, like right before he leaves, he talks about like Slutty the Vampire Slayer and like totally is trying to egg Angel on and push his buttons, similar to what he did with Buffy in the previous episode. He says that Angel's name did not come up. And that's not true because we know that Spike himself actually brought Angel up to Buffy. And that's the thing that turned that fight around and empowered her. And I just want to reiterate that Spike is an unreliable narrator. And that is important. So remember that for later.
Yes.
Then Spike takes off. We're in Angel's apartment. Spike's tearing it up, trying to look for the gem of Amara. Gets impatient after like tearing apart one single thing and is like, oh, this is not going to be fun. Time to go hire some more people to do it for me.
He's so lazy. He has like no grit.
He really is. Like he's like, oh, dang it. This sucks. Okay. I'm just going to sit here and wait until Cordelia and Doyle inevitably come in. Cool. All right. You guys can do it for me. Like what a little like lazy butthead. Like do your own damage here.
Oh, Spikey.
Oh, don't call him that.
Spikey. Blondie Spikey Bear.
Blondie Bear. Where's Harmony? Oh, poor Harmony.
So Marcus is continuing to torture Angel. He's poking, or he's got a pistol and he's shooting holes in the ceiling. Light's coming in. And he's given some really good dialogue. We live in the darkness. We hate the light of day. The light hates up. And then he says, you hid the ring, Angel, or you could be walking in the light right now. So I have to wonder, what do you want if not the ring? It's through the pain that we find the truth of who we are. It strips us of our defenses. And it is clever because it's like, okay, why is Angel not wearing this ring? And that's like a really good character question. Cordelia and Doyle come in. Cordelia has the crossbow. I hated this whole moment right here when Spike's like, oh, you couldn't shoot me. I'd be over there faster. There were multiple times in that conversation where Spike was not paying attention. He even turns to walk away and that's when you could have just shot him right in the back. Like, come on,
Cordelia. Then she just kind of like looks down like almost in shame and it's like,
and I think they were trying to build that up because Cordelia's been talking about how scared she kind of is of Spike. But it's like, why come and confront him if you're not
Sure to follow through? Could they really have taken Spike? Like, I don't know, maybe both of them if they like overpowered him. But like we always say, like Spike is impulsive. Like you don't know what he's going to do. And especially if you're not like superhuman like him.
Yeah, I agree. So Spike's like, do my dirty work for me. Find the ring. You have until sundown to save him. I'll be behind Peterson's fishery. And I was like, did he just like think of this off the fly? Like, oh my word. He's just so stupid because he's like, I don't want to have to hide or I don't want to have to look for things. Okay. I'm just going to ask them to do it for me and I'm going to threaten them and then just walk. So like, what is he going to do for the rest of the day?
There's not even like that much of an exchange where he's like threatening them. Like it's almost like Spike is just there and he's just giving them instructions and they're like, okay, we'll do it. And then,
Spike.
He just like leaves.
I know. It's very, very odd. I was like, why are we listening to Spike? Honestly. Just do what you're doing. Like,
but I mean, I guess like they're thinking about like Angel, but it's just like, I don't know.
I know. It was very weird. I was like, well, this is weird. Marcus continues to taunt, you did terrible things when you were bad, didn't you? Now you're trying so hard to do good. I can make the pain go away. I can give it back. Tell me the truth. I want to know what you want and I'll know if you're lying. And Angel says, I want forgiveness. Oh,
yeah.
I love it. Yeah. It's so good. And then Marcus says, yes, that's the truth and you want to earn it. You're not the type that takes the easy way out, which is why I like you so much. In the end, you won't feel guilt or remorse or anything but pure darkness. In the end, the ring, the past, none of it will mean anything anymore. You'll be free, I promise.
I don't understand what he was like inferring there. Like, is he saying that Angel should just give himself over and like go to the dark side?
So they haven't talked about it yet, but there's a prophecy. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
There's a couple prophecies, but there's one in particular.
Yes.
And okay. I think it kind of like it kind of links to what that. Doyle was talking about. Yes. In the first okay. episode where he was like, the powers that be sent him. So it has to do with that whole thing. You know.
Yes, I know now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So Angel's been trying to get the stake, gets really close to getting Marcus. Of course, stupid Spike shows up, foils that plan, and Marcus is like mad enough to go in and just give him a petty punch. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you almost killed me before I got my gem. So then Cordy and Doyle are going through Angel's apartment. Can't find anything, decide to go down and look into the sewers, thinking, okay, this has got to be the only place. Doyle, behind Cordelia's back, pulls up his, like, demon face and apparently sniffs out the ring. I'm not sure how that happened, but
yeah.
He found it. So this scene, what did you guys think of this scene? Because I thought the way it was shot was so beautiful.
Oh, the outline, like the shadow. Yeah, very cool. Yeah. I thought that was very, very cool. He's just standing there like a mob boss or something. And he's just like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't even look them in the face. He's like staring straight ahead like, I'm too good to look you in the eyes. Yeah. What a punk. As he literally can't even get into the sunlight. Like, there's honestly. Two of them. They can pull him into the sunlight, can't they? Bye-bye, Spike. Barbecue.
I feel like Spike would like literally rather kill himself than let that happen.
I know, right? He probably would. He can try though. So there are tons of shots throughout this episode where Spike and Marcus and even Angel are outlined by light. And I think the writers are consistently showing us that these villains are in the dark while people like Cordelia and Doyle are in the light. And this scene in particular is really beautifully done because you have Spike who is so close to what he wants. He's literally like right there. He's so close to the ring, the freedom that comes with the light, yet he's unable to touch it. And it's a really, really pretty image. So Cordelia's like, give us Angel. And Spike's like, ha ha, I never said I would give you Angel for the ring. Give it to me now. So Doyle throws the ring past Angel and Marcus. And then we hear tires screeching. Oz comes in. So cool.
Saving the day.
Yes,
love Oz.
I loved it.
With two crossbows. Like, what?
Oh, he's such a baddie. He's such
it really reminded me of The Wish when I think Oz does the exact same thing.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And this is why I can picture Oz in LA fighting evil with Angel Investigations. Because he's
a musician by night and he's in a band, but then
you've got an actress, an aspiring actress, a musician in a band, and they fight evil with a vampire with a soul. And it's just like a good, like, I love it. And then there's Doyle with the visions. Like, it's just like it would have been a cute little team of like baddies.
I agree. I mean, to be fair, I feel like Oz is a really good friend to Buffy, but Angel could have used a really good friend in Oz as well.
Yeah.
So Spike's like, oh no, they got away. They took Angel with them. Where's the bloody ring? And I was like, hello, dude, come on. Oh, man.
Like, why are you so shocked? You did this to yourself, Spike.
Exactly. He's all like, oh, I'm intuitive. I can read people. Lovers walk. I'm not love's bitch and blah, blah, blah. And then he's like over here like, oh, no, he's a simpleton. He only just wants to torture people. Doesn't care about a ring that makes him immortal.
Like any vampire would want to get their hands on that. Any one of them.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. The transcript I'm reading says, cut to Marcus slowly walking out in the sun. He does not burn. Cut to Spike having a tantrum in the warehouse.
That's exactly what he does. That's exactly what he does. Like, that is signature Spike reaction to anything that, like, things that are of his own doing. And he just, like, throws a tantrum, like a
small
child.
You need to do your Spike cry.
Leia will now act out her impression of Spike.
I am so wronged always.
I will say it is really funny that his hair lights up because he was the one making fun of Angel's gel in his hair. And this man's like cemented hairstyle.
Spike, you bleach your hair probably like once a week to keep it that color. Like, stop acting like you're not also obsessed with your hair. Please.
He's literally the most high maintenance vampire that we've met yet. You know, he paints his own nails.
Yes.
He has to have his hair bleached constantly. And apparently he wears lips in his shoes. No, that's just James Marsters. But I like James to pretend Marsters. Spike is wearing
But lips. Also, like, Spike has the same outfit for, like, three seasons now. So maybe he's not so high.
He probably smells so gross. Does he even do laundry? Like
cigarettes and, like, Jack Daniels. That's the Spike scent that I like. That's the vibes I get. Either, like, he smells like bong water. Or, like, cigarettes, or, like, bleach. Just alcohol, like, tequila or vodka or, like, whiskey or some variation of that. And, like, cheap colognes sometimes.
Dublique.
He would have fit right in at Dublique.
He's like, I just want to make a connection, you know?
Gross.
I do want to say, you know what scene we forgot? The one where Angel's like, she's cuter when she's kicking your ass.
Yes.
You're right. You're right. I did forget that. Should we play it?
Yeah.
Yes.
She is cute when she's hurting, isn't she? She's cuter when she's kicking your ass.
Woo!
Bird! Just like Spike's hair in 30 seconds.
Angel with them lines.
Honestly. I love it. I love how supportive he is. She's even cuter when she's kicking your ass. Yes.
Yeah, she really is, though.
Like, it's almost like Angel was like, I didn't have to be there to know that she did because the gem is here and you are here. You know?
Exactly. He believes in her.
What a man. All right, so the scene in which Marcus is walking on the pier in full sunlight, he's wearing sunglasses, which is really creepy because he's in vamp face. It's just really strange. Mm-hmm. But apparently there was a scene that they cut where Marcus kills a sunglasses vendor and it was deleted. And that's why you see him wearing the sunglasses now. But the actor that portrayed the vendor was apparently still credited in the episode, even though they cut it.
That's good.
Yeah, I guess so. He's like, ooh, guys, everyone sit down, fam. I'm in this episode. I'm going to get killed. And he's like, wait a minute. Those are my sunglasses. Where am I? So apparently Angel's dying in the van. Like, they're like, we need to get him to a hospital. I'm he's been through worse. Wow.
I think he's okay. Like, he just needs that barb, like, thing removed from his shoulder.
We're so unsympathetic. We're like, he's fine.
I just feel like Angel's a vampire. Like, if he was in a lot of danger, like, he would be dust.
Yeah, he would already been dead.
Yeah, isn't that pipe not even wood? It's just, like, metal, too. Like, he should be fine.
And, like, what is a hospital gonna do when they check his pulse and there isn't one?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no surprise that it's Cordelia that's suggesting they send Cordelia's him to the hospital.
Let's go to the hospital. And who is it? Oz is like, I don't think they treat
Oz
vampires.
Oz says, I hear you, but which one?
Oh, I love him.
So kind
he's
to her.
So nice. Cordelia.
He's like, you know what? That is an excellent, excellent solution to this problem. But hear me out. I have a better solution.
I mean, to be fair, she's coming from like a place, like a really good place. But like,
yes,
girl, you lived on the Hellmouth for...
You know better. Yeah.
Like, come on, Cordelia.
And then Oz is like, I know basic sixth grade first aid, but I can improvise, you know, if we can get him to someplace dark. So Angel's like, no, we need to turn around. We need to turn around. Cordelia's like, he's delirious. Ignore him. And Angel's like, he's got a thing for children. And Oz just stares at him. And he's like, turn around, Oz. And Oz immediately like, say no more. And I'm like, ah. Come on, Oz, stay on Team Angel, man.
Honestly.
Then Oz drives right into the pier. Cordelia tries to get all the scouts off. And Doyle, bless him, tries to go in there and punch out Marcus.
Doyle's like, I'll get him. And I was like, you'll get what?
Even the way he wound up, too. I was like, Doyle, you're very sweet. But no. Angel's like, okay, open the door. Oz opens it. Angel launches himself out, catches fire, tackles Marcus, goes over the railing into the water.
Yeah.
It's so cool. And also, this is so smart, right? Like, they're right near the beach. Like, the pier, the fact that they can go underneath to have that fight, it just is really well scripted.
And just the image of, like, Angel or stunt double, but of Angel running and catching fire. And he's just like, it looks like he's flying almost at one point, but he's like on fire. Fly? And it's like,
yeah,
can you fly? Except now it's Angel. Oh my God.
Ooh, he can though.
He can.
He's an angel. He can fly.
He's Batman also.
I'm so cheesy. I'm just as bad as all the dialogue here.
Honestly.
So they fight. Marcus is like, what were you planning on doing? Killing me? And Angel's like, well, I did promise. So he fights. He pushes him against this plank that conveniently breaks off, leaving the shape of a stake. And then Angel says, you never cracked me, Marcus. You tried and you failed. Now that's got to be torture as he stakes him. And I was like, I had to think about it for a minute, but then I was like, I think it's interesting because I think Marcus didn't think that Angel would actually kill him or even try. I think Marcus was like, oh, you're trying to be good, therefore you would never kill. Therefore you would never be selfish enough to try to take the ring. And I think that that perfectly sums up Angel very well. Like, he's a hero, but he's not pure. He's flawed, mm-hmm. and he's willing to get his hands dirty, but it's always for the right reasons, you know?
Yeah.
And then this moment. The music, again, similar to Revelations.
Just like childlike wonder. He's just looking up at the sky, and he's just so I don't know how Angel didn't experience like a moment of perfect happiness on that beach, seeing the sun for the first time and like directly in 200 years. Like,
And I just think back to what Marcus was saying. He says, you know, I'm going to bring you to that place of childlike innocence and wonder and all that other stuff, because that's when you know what you want. That's when it's all very clear for you. And I think the fact that they focused on the children playing on the beach was supposed to be an emphasis of that. Also, too, to remind Angel what he's fighting for. He's fighting in the dark so that all these people can enjoy being in the light. And I think he needed that reminder.
Yeah.
And I think it's not just the sun that he's enjoying for that minute. I think it's that brief feeling of hope that he can one day have redemption, be human and personal.
And he says later on in the episode, today, I had a pretty great day today. Even though he was tortured and like had like sticks and like in his limbs and like was on fire, and he still was like, I had a pretty great day today. And I was like, you know what, Angel? That moment on the beach was worth all of it. Definitely.
Yeah. It's just nice to see him happy. We don't get that very much. Oz the entire time. He's very pale.
Except Oz is also so pale. Like,
he's whiter than him. So I was like, Seth Green, you're a ginger. Yeah. From one ginger to another, I hope you put on sunblock, man.
Yeah, SPF 100, please.
So we're at the top of a skyscraper. Angel's watching the sunset. I love that he gave himself this the rest of that day. So I wonder what they did for the rest of that afternoon. The fact that like he had the ring and it was probably like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Like, what did he do? Did he like go hang out in the sunlight? You know, like I kind of like to imagine.
Maybe they just hung out on the beach and like got an ice cream.
Rode a Ferris wheel or something.
Like, right on the Santa Monica Pier.
Yes. Yep.
So Doyle's all thinking that he's going to keep the ring. He's like, why are you watching the sunset, though? Like, there's another one tomorrow. And Angel's like, not for me. And
poor baby.
Angel's like, I'm not going to wear the ring. He goes, I thought about it from every angle. And what I figure is I did a lot of damage in my day, more than you can imagine. So Doyle's like, okay, so are you trying to punish yourself here? I mean, I think that like you can be a lot of help. You can help a lot of people in the daytime, not just at night. And Angel says they have help. The whole world is designed for them so much that they have no idea what goes on around them after dark. They don't see the weak ones lost in the night or the things that prey on them. And if I join them, maybe I'd stop seeing too.
Ugh. Yeah.
So good.
That line. Wow.
And the fact that this is intentionally shot over the city, because Episode 1 was all about Angel saying, my city, like claiming that spot. So I think this is just a reaffirmation that he's doing the right thing. And I think it's not so much a, okay, I'm going to do this. It's like, no, I actually want to do this now, which I think is a huge jump.
I think he, like that line that I read, he was at a crossroads in this episode. And the ring was what put him there. And now he's made it to like the other side where he also mentions, like, I was brought back for a reason and it wasn't this.
Yeah.
So he's on the path now to, like, figuring out what his purpose is. And it's just – it's such a huge moment for Angel. And it's so beautiful.
And I think everyone feels, or most people feel this way. Like, I understand the symbolism of him destroying the ring. Angel doesn't want to take a shortcut to his redemption. Like, he actually wants to earn it. And from a show perspective, it would have made the show less compelling if he had the ring all the time. It would have been like Vampire Diaries, where they're just basically humans that have super speed. Yeah. But dang it, man. it hurts a little bit to watch him destroy the ring.
I think so too. But I also go back to the fact that he's still, like, a big thing for me in, like, justifying why the ring has to be destroyed, because I understand it's, like, frustrating. Like, why not just keep it? This is, like, a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. But it's, like, Angel also lives with, like, a demon inside him. And
right. Yeah.
There's so many callbacks to Angelus in this episode, I think, to remind him that, like, this ring with him is not safe. No matter mm-hmm. how safe it is with Angel, he still has Angelus inside of him. And, like, it would just, like I said before, it would be catastrophic if Angelus were to get a hold of it. And if he knows where it is in the world, like, whoever has it is dead. So it's like, why I wish Buffy, I wish Buffy had just, like, kept it hidden.
Yeah, I know.
But then it, I don't know, but then we wouldn't have gotten this, like, beautiful moment and this, like, sacrifice that he's making. But it's like, I wish we could, like, keep the ring, but.
So on Angel destroying the ring, Marty Noxon says, if I was Angel, I might just put the ring away rather than destroy it. You never know when you might need it. But I understood why he did what he did better than Gloria Stewart in Titanic. I wanted to slap her. Give that diamond to somebody.
Oh, that old lady, that infuriated
me. Yeah. And then Tim Minear responded, I feel like this is something I would say. He was like, that's not the problem. Like, he responded to what Marty said. He goes, that's not the problem I have with the ending of Titanic. My problem with the ending of Titanic is that she throws it in the water as if that means something about Jack.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with Jack. It was the other guy's diamond. And I have no idea why she's throwing it in the water. But in this episode, it makes perfect sense for Angel to destroy the ring. Can he be trusted? That is the point of the series. Mm-hmm. If he has the power to be invincible, what would happen if he spent eternity as Angelus? It's too dangerous.
It is.
Was there any other vampire in the history of the Joss-verse at that point that has a soul? No. So the person that could possibly wear that ring would be Angel, and Angel knows that he can't be trusted.
Like, if Angel's soul wasn't, if Angel didn't have a curse on his soul and he had it forever, I would say absolutely keep the ring. 100%. Yeah. But I mean, Angel's entire character is based around the fact that he has that, you know, dark side.
The duality.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, like, in a perfect world where Angel is just a regular vampire with a soul, even though that's not, like, the perfect world, but definitely, definitely, dude, keep the ring. But it's like, that's not, like, it just doesn't make sense for him to keep it, even for it to be in the world with him knowing that it's in the world.
The thing is, the ring makes him happier. And unfortunately, happiness is a really dangerous thing for him to mess around mm-hmm. with, you know? So then Doyle's like, oh, that Rachel girl with that crazy boyfriend called said to say thanks and that she found a little faith, said you know what that means. I love how this ends. Angel's like, I don't know about you, but I had a nice day, you know, except for the bulk of it where I was nearly tortured to death. And then Doyle's like, yeah, well, you stood up. And Angel's like, oh, God, I was this close to telling him everything. I mean, one more hot poker and I was giving him the ring, your mom, everything. And then Passion of the Nerd suspects, he thinks that last little bit where Angel says, how is your mom? He thinks David Boreanaz probably ad-libbed that and they decided to keep it in.
It's cute.
It just is such a weird way to end the episode. Yeah. But
how is your
it's
mom?
It's fun. Aww. Yep. And then Passion of the Nerd points out, he says, the titles of the episodes for Buffy, Harsh Light of Day, and then this one, In the Dark, can almost be swapped because Buffy ends her episode in the dark and uncertain about her path moving forward, while Angel ends his with clarity for the first time in a while, which is really, really cool.
That is really cool.
So, yeah.
Yep, yep. I love that episode. I think that's one of my favorite episodes of season one.
It is a really, really great episode. It's a great episode for Angel in particular. I feel like I'm kind of iffy on everyone else.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I think this is a really, really great episode for Angel. And I mean, rightfully so, it's his show and, like, we're on this journey, like, for him. So yeah, I also really, really liked it. I even enjoyed Spike in this episode, even though he's nasty. I enjoyed him. Not gonna lie. He's entertaining to watch. You just have to remember that he's an evil son of a bitch.
Yes. And as long as you keep that perspective, it's totally fine.
Absolutely.
No, I agree. I think anytime an episode really focuses on one of the characters and uses the plot to inform them, I feel like that makes for a much better episode. And I know, like, for like the first half, we talked about this in our first episode, the first half of the season is less focused on the individual characters that we come to love and more on like the side characters that come in or like the character of the week. But this one I felt like did a really good job of focusing on Angel.
Mm-hmm.
Sarah, Isaac slid something underneath the door for you, I think.
Oh, he did. He colored me a picture.
That's so nice.
He's sweet.
Really sad that you're leaving.
Well, hey, you know what? We're actually recording at Chrissy's house. This is a shout out to Isaac, who colored me. It looks like a Sonic the Hedgehog picture. Isaac, if you're listening to this, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me use your Wi-Fi, bud. Can't wait to hug you again.
He's going to tell everyone at school he's famous now, like he did.
Yeah, I know he is. Such a sweetheart. All right, guys. Well, that was In the Dark. I enjoyed that. Thank you so much for joining us, Chrissy.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. Seriously, I love your commentary.
I love your Angel thirst.
Oh, I love that, man. Any day, anytime, David, if you're listening. Any day, anytime.
Oh, love you, girl. All right. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know your thoughts on the gem. Do you think Angel should have kept it? What did you think of Spike in this episode? Did you notice the parallels between Rachel and Lenny, Angel and Buffy? Thanks so much for listening, guys, and we will talk to you next time.
Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.